Hello and welcome to The Tips, a brand new weekly podcast from the DP World Tour. Each week, we will focus on the runners and riders from the main tours on both sides of the pond, and with the help of some expert guests, we will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Now, time to meet the guests. This week, we welcome back Ben Coley, the golf writer for sportinglife.com, and also Dave Tindall, freelance golf writer who has done plenty of work for many publications, including The Guardian. Later on, we also hear from our man on the ground, Jamie Spence, a golfer turned commentator who won twice on the DP World Tour, and he can give us further insights into both the courses and fields this week. So let's get into it. And there's only one place to start, Ben Coley. It is with you, the DS Automobiles Italian Open from last week. We had a winner to start, to kick off, Adrien Meronk. How'd you feel? Must be a good weekend.
It was a good weekend, yeah, relatively stress-free, to be honest with you. Really pleased for him as well. I think he's become very popular. Obviously, he's something of a pioneer in terms of Polish golf, and the list of things he's achieved is already phenomenal, and there's loads more to come as well. So we said last week that winning wouldn't guarantee him a Ryder Cup spot by any means, but boy, is it a feather in his cap to have done that at Marco Simone. And look, what a trio of titles to kick off your career. He's won the Irish Open, the Australian Open, and the Italian Open. I mean, what a set that is. That's better than a lot of players managed an entire career. So yeah, well done to him, and obviously very pleased to kick off with a winner.
Absolutely. That was a 20-1 winner that we started with on the podcast. And we welcome Dave Tindall, who also had some success over the pond. We had K.H. Lee from your article, which was, I think, 125-1. He got a bit of each way returns after a very fast start at Quail Hollow.
Yeah, just about. He scraped and tied eighth in the end. I was sexting Ben at the time, and I think he was tied 10th. And I was thinking, can he just sneak in there? And he did, so that was quite good. K.H. Lee, normally the man you back this week, and we'll come on to that. But yeah, he did quite well for me. As you said, he got a fast start, didn't he? And seemed to be playing beautifully. And then he double bogeyed the final hole on the Friday to drop out. And then he went a bit flat, but he did just get it going in the final round, bogey free, which was good. That was a good event. Wyndham Clark took the title there. Again, I discussed this with Ben, because I think he'd been on a lot of people's radars, but I was thinking maybe his odds were just a bit short in various tournaments, like the bookies were ahead of the game with him. But he played really well. On that Sunday, it looked like he might be one of those who, where's that first birdie going to come from? Unless it comes, you could see him just missing birdie putt after birdie putt. But in the end, he sort of flew at the finish, didn't he? And kicked clear and won by quite a distance. And it was Xander Schauffele that we were a bit disappointed in. So Wyndham Clark, I mean, now what for him? You wonder whether he can really win a big one. Perhaps we'll find out quite soon.
Absolutely. As you say, his odds did go down. He was around the 66-1 mark, Wyndham Clark, when betting got underway on Thursday. And it was an impressive finish from him, as it was Adrien Meronk, who held some very important putts on 17 and 18 to get the job done. I think it's time now to get straight into this week on the DP World Tour, starting with the Sudal Open. Yes, that's right. We head to Belgium, and we saw this last year with Sam Horsfield winning 13 under with Ryan Fox and Yannick Poole coming in a tie for second place, just two shots behind him. Fox did lead, but couldn't quite get it done in the final round. A little bit about the course. It's the second edition of the Sudal Open at Rincon. We saw it with the match play a few years back, even though that was a composite course, as we'll see again, and nine holes. And again, another winner there. Adrian Ategi is featuring in the field. We also have more Ryder Cup flavour with vice-captains Thomas Bjorn, Eduardo Molinari, and the home favourite Nicholas Kolsarts all playing. So before we look at players and your picks, guys, I want to know a bit about the course, what we've learned from last year. What kind of stats are at an absolute premium here? And Dave, I'll come to you first. What have you been looking at this week?
Yeah, so we had those two match play events, and it seemed to be the shorter hitter, the shorter, steadier hitter, which made sense because it's quite a tight tree line course. there's a few correlations made between that and Karen Golf Club used in Kenya, and also Diamond for the Austrian Open. And then we kind of got an event where it didn't really work out that way, where you got big hitters all over the leaderboard. I think Ben had actually sort of had a bit of a guess that that could happen. I noticed in his preview. So, yeah, it's again because of 1 year of big hitters doing quite well. I mean, big hitters, another word for describing those big hitters are good golfers. So do we just think it was because they're good at golf that they played well? So 1 year of evidence against two of match play, it's hard to really pinpoint exactly what you need. I think both Ben and I agree on this is what does stand out from both events is good iron play, good approach play. So that's where I would be looking for this event, certainly.
Okay, great. Yeah, as you say, the big names really came to the fore last year. Sam Horsfield obviously won around 22-1. He was fifth in betting. Ryan Fox was fourth in betting. He was runner up. Adrian Moronk was up there. Ben, what about yourself? Is it also the driving accuracy we're looking at, or is there something in and around the greens?
I think part of the fun with this week is that you can kind of do anything off the tee, I think. I think, obviously, we had those big hitters, but both Horsfield and Fox lost strokes off the tee. So it wasn't their drivers that did this for them, as Dave's alluded to. It was very much their approach play. They putted well as well. And I think, actually, that course correlation Dave mentioned with Karen is quite a good clue as to what you can do in these courses. Because, yes, they are shorter. They do require accuracy. But there's a risk-reward element. Like at Karen, there are a couple of par fours that you can drive, but not everybody will. Very different to some of the par fours we saw at Quail Hollow last week, where everybody in the field goes for the green, certainly on that eighth hole at Quail Hollow. Here, you'll see a couple of them. The 16th's a good example, where some players lay back, some players go for the green. And if you're going for the green, then there's going to be a little bit more luck involved as to how that plays out for you. Above all else, though, as Dave said, I think really sharp iron players. We've got small greens as well. Reminds me of courses like Kron or Valderrama. And generally with those, you've got to be really neat and tidy around the green. So although Horsfield and Fox dominated in the way they did, it was kind of a private battle for most of that Sunday. I think that might be a slight red herring. And I certainly think the contrast from last week, where ultimately by the end, you had to be a big driver, that isn't the case this week. It's not an excuse to be a shorter hitter. And we'll see plenty of those on the leaderboard.
Okay, Jamie, you've been to Ringvan International a few times. What can you tell us from actually walking the fairway?
Yeah, it's a really, really nice golf course. It's not long. You've got to plot your way around a bit. However, there are four very long par fours, 6, 9, 10, and 13. And in the ninth and the 10th, the ninth to end the front nine, 10 to start the back nine, two brilliant par fours. Arrow straight. 10th just drifts a little bit to the right, but about 490 yards. Probably the two holes the guys have got to get the driver out. They don't hit driver very often. Even on the par fives, you might see them play up with a three wood to the corners and then play onto the green. And it's only got three par threes as well, which is quite an anomaly as well. So lots of par fours, but lots of strategy that will have to take place. A couple of drivable par fours on the back nine. In these softer conditions, you might not get quite the run, but I've seen a number of players drive these greens, especially the 15th. It comes to just the right time of the event. I remember Ryan Fox last year deciding to hit an iron for safety off that tee last year. Unfortunately, he hit it up the face of the bunker, took five. That was a key moment last year in that event for Ryan Fox, when I just thought, come on, Ryan, hit the three wood or the drive. You can knock it on easy. He decided a little bit of caution. So that's what you're going to get in this golf course. It's the decisions you make off the tee. And it's in excellent shape. It's a fantastic venue for the players as well, with all the practice facilities and everything else there in the beautiful city of Antwerp. So, yeah, it's one of the events I'm sure the players look forward to, and I certainly do.
Yeah, great. And you mentioned, and we heard it from the guy, the premium on driving accuracy with the tree line and being straight. But also, there was a little trend we saw that was greens in regulation. How crucial is that, Sadal? Because it was alluded to, they're actually quite small greens and they're not the biggest targets for the guys to hit, and we've seen some very high ranking guys there, like Yannick Paul and Alexander Bjork, who are both in the top 15 on tour for greens and regs. So just how important is that at Ringvan?
Well, I think the thing about that is if you miss the greens here, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble. Not necessarily water or huge bunkers or anything like that, but it just rolls off the green. The greens are raised a little bit above you and the chipping becomes very difficult. It's not the long rough. You go into the pine straw, you go into the edge of the trees there, and it makes it very difficult to chip up and down, invariably hitting downhill as well. So that's why the premium is on hitting greens. here at Brinkven. It's not so much hitting the greens. It's the fact that if you miss them, it's a really tricky up and down.
Okay, well, there you go. A little hidden gem. And that's the beauty of having these experts. Maybe have a little look at scrambling numbers when looking for your picks this week at the Soudal Open.
Looking at the market again, quite similar to last week. Some similar names and also prices. There's no big favourite at all, and it's all very close. Just a scanning through, we've got Alexander Bjork at 18-1s and Thomas Dietrich, Yannick Paul at 20s, Ategi at 20s, Campillo at 22s, Olesen around that similar mark. So let's get into the tips and see if the top of the market features for you guys. So Dave, with that in mind, who's your headline pick this week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Alexander Bjork. You mentioned him there right at the top of the betting. I think he's 18-1. Down the years, he's been a player where I've not quite been able to get right. I think he's had a good week and I thought, right, he's ready, and then he'll have a bad week. And he's never quite had that consistency. But I think he has got that in his game this year, which is good. He has won on the DP World Tour, won the China Open. And his form is just really good, isn't it? Looking at 4, 14, 16, 28, 42, 2, 16. So in terms of stringing good results together, I think this is maybe the time to catch Alexander Bjork rather than predict when that good week might come, because I think it's coming all the time at the minute. We've all mentioned the approach play. I think the other thing I did notice last year was strokes game putting. You look at the top five finishers, 5th, 8th, 25th, 7th, 2nd. So certainly putting well, served you well last season. So I made a list of players who are quite high on the strokes game approach and strokes game putting stats. And Alexander Bjork was right up there in both. So he's 19th in strokes gained approach. So 13th in approach, 19th in putting, but quite rare to find a player in the top 20 for both. And he played the course quite well last year, 22nd. So all in all, it's a fairly obvious pick. But, you know, 20-1 was a winner last week with Maronk, so hopefully the class will tell again this week. So yeah, 18-1 Alexander Bjork for me.
Yeah, and he featured well last week. And other stats I saw was 12th in greens in reg. So being small greens, he hits a lot of them. If that putter's hot, should go well. And also 13th in driving accuracy, which is a bit of a premium, as you say. And I know Ben historically has liked Alex Bjork as well. And he'll want to be playing with a lot of Ryder Cup guys, might want to be on the radar. 2 weeks in a row he's featured. I think he was first round leader last week for Matt Cooper. So he's becoming a favourite already of the podcast. And how about yourself, Ben? Who's headlining for you at the Soudal Open?
Yeah, it's very similar to last week. As you said, in terms of the market, you've got sort of six players who are all, any one of them could have been favourite, really. They're very different players in the main to last week, because I think players are so good now with their schedules. A lot of the guys know when to take a week off and when not to. And a player like Maronk, who's obviously got the USPGA coming up, he was never going to play here, whereas it's a good opportunity for someone like Alex Bjork to win for the first time in a little while. The one for me, 3 points each way, Adrian Ategi. I think he's the man to beat. He's obviously a course winner, having won the Belgian knockout here. He also played well last year, as he did when defending his Belgian knockout title. So he's played well every visit to the course. He's a four-time DP World Tour winner now. Without question, the highlight of his career came at Valderrama in October when he ran away from the field there. Never in doubt, a really good front-running display. He's definitely got the Ryder Cup on his agenda. I don't know if he's quite in calculations yet. He'll need to be winning again. That much seems clear. The key sort of negative, if you look at it, would be his form. He missed two cuts in South Africa and he finished 40th last week. But South Africa, he missed both cuts really narrowly. And certainly the second of them, when Nick Backham won, was on a long rain-softened course. I wouldn't have expected him to play well there. And to a large degree, I wouldn't have expected him to play well in Italy for the very same reasons. And actually, he was in the final group at halfway. He was just about the favourite to win entering the weekend, and then had a really difficult Saturday. And it was quite noticeable that the course played differently at the weekend. They pushed a couple of tees up and it became all about power, the like of which Maronk and Longask have, but Ategi doesn't. In a more tangible sense, he's probably the best iron player in the field. He is the best scrambler in the field. So the putter is the question mark. If he could have Alex Bjork's putter for the week, I think we'd be in business. But if he can make just his share, I think he'll put up a really good bid to win this tournament again. I think with Ategi, you have to focus on a very small, select group of tournaments and golf courses, rather. And this is one of them.
Okay, great. Yeah. Speaking of putting, he did sneak, as you say, wasn't up there with all of Bjork's numbers, but he is 14th this year in average putts, which is a big improvement from last year per round. And the Ryder Cup's got to be on his mind, because, I mean, we've seen he's a bit of a match play specialist, it's fair to say, after not only the Belgian knockout, but also a Paul Laurie match play, had a win there as well. So you would think he's on the radar of some of the guys and Ryder Cup figures who are in Belgium this week. So that's 3 points each way at 20-1 for Adrian Ategui, and 2 points each way for Alex Bjorg at 18-1 for Dave. Tips number two, Ben, who have we got following up from your side?
I'm going to go with Eddie Pepperell next. Obviously, one of the class acts of the field, a two-time DP World Tour winner. He played fabulously in the second half of last season as well. And I think that really tells you perhaps why he didn't play so well at the Sudal Open in the spring, because he simply wasn't playing well anywhere at the time. I do think it's a course that should suit him. You know, he probably first came on the sort of wider radar with sixth place at Wentworth, which he's since replicated. That would be a broadly similar course to this one. He's one of the best iron players on the DP World Tour without question. And we saw that last week when he returned from quite a long break and bagged the top 10 in Italy. He did play quite well in Italy last year, but I wouldn't have it down as a great course for him. We know Eddie doesn't always carry a driver, such as his, say, lack of fondness for hitting that club off the tee. So when you've got players like Maronk, you know, and golf courses with 300-yard carries, it's going to be hard for him to compete. So I thought that was a really eye-catching effort in Italy. He'd missed every cut prior to that this season, but if you look at his schedule, for me, you know, he was playing his first time at Yas Links. He was Dubai Desert Classic, another course that's probably a bit long for him, and he's never played well there, really. He played, I think, in Singapore and at Ras Al Khaimah. Again, courses where big drivers dominated. This is the first tournament, and I include last week, actually, in this. This is the first tournament I think really plays to his strengths. And if that's the case, then he only needs to build on last week. And look, he's not necessarily the most consistent player. We know that. His best golf is better than almost everybody in this field. His worst golf is worse than quite a lot of the bigger names. But what I will say is, when he gets hot, he does often keep it going for 2 or 3 weeks at least. And if he does that, he's definitely got a chance here. So if the putts keep dropping, I think he's a really big player. And what I would be absolutely certain of is that he would like this course a lot more than last year's miscut would lead you to believe.
Yeah, great. And we saw a fair bit of him in the coverage over last week, and it was great to see him back. And as you say, he's very vocal about his relationship with the driver, and he hasn't played much this year, so we didn't want to look too much into the stats, but he was 12th on tour last year for driving accuracy. So again, ranks very highly on that, which will definitely benefit him on this tighter course. So we've got 1.5 units each way there, Eddie Pepperell. Best price 40-1, which after a good showing top 10 last week, certainly is nice to see. Finally, maybe someone a bit further down in the odds and area and favourites. Dave, who's finishing off and rounding off your outright picks here?
Yeah, he was much further down the odds yesterday, but there's been quite a bit of money for Max Kiefer. I think when I first looked, he was 60s. He's been backed into 40s, and I can see why. I can see why he's a pretty hot horse this week. Three top 20s in his last four starts, and the last two 16th in Japan, fifth in Italy last week, which is impressive. Last two tournaments, he's been in the top 10 for driving accuracy, which has to bode well for Max Kiefer. He is a winner, of course. He won last summer, the Czech Masters last summer, which is another always, you know, recent-ish win is what you want under your belt. Good approach play numbers, last two events, top 25 in those. And I did mention before Diamond being a good course that correlates well. Well, he was runner-up there the last time he played it in 2021. He's got another couple of top 25s there. So Max Kiefer on a course that should suit him. It hasn't so far. His bare results aren't anything special. I think he was 28th in the first one in the match play. But in the form he's in at the moment, hitting it straight, good approach play. I think Max Kiefer can go well. I thought 40-1, even though, yeah, the 60s has gone, I still think 40s is a playable each way price on him because, as I say, his form is good and he's doing the things that you want to be doing well. So Max Kiefer putted well as well last week. So a point each way.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. As I say, he's popular and people after last week, obviously fifth, really expect a lot from him. And I also had a quick look. This was quite a high-scoring event last year, and he seems to do quite well at that mark, around the minus 10, minus 11 winning scores. So he could well feature. Finally, a bit more of an outsider from you, Ben. What about yourself? Have we got another feature?
I've got two Spaniards for me. Yeah, Santiago Tarrio rounds off my selections, a point each way. I think he's about 80-1 at the moment. I think with him, I sort of described him as a bit of a mini Ategi. He certainly does the same things well. He's a brilliant iron player, and he led the field in strokes gained approach in Italy last week. He's accurate off the tee. We know he's got a touch of class from his Challenge Tour days. He's not quite translated that to the DP World Tour. But I do think, again, as with Ategi, you've got to focus on a very specific set of courses. And one of them would be the course they played in Kenya this year, where he was third. And I don't think that was a massive surprise. He played well in this tournament last year as well. And I think the Scandinavian mix was his best effort in 2022. The putter has been his problem. I think anyone who's seen him play will see that he's got a pretty unique style with that putter, and it doesn't always look totally convincing. That would definitely be the slight snag, because as Dave's pointed out, you needed to putt well here last year. But everything else about his game is really solid. And I think this is a really good golf course for him. So I'm very happy to chance him. Hopefully the putts drop, but he certainly arrives in good form after a top 20 in Italy. And again, a bit like Pepperell and a couple of my selections, actually, that is a golf course where I wouldn't have expected him to play that well. So the fact that he still managed to bodes really well now that he's coming, a bit like Kiefer and Bjork from Dave's selections as well, now that they come to a golf course which really is more suitable for them.
Yeah, and he's, again, got pretty good memories. I mean, 33rd last year without setting the world light with a low round. Went very well overall. Interestingly, looking at your picks, I don't know if accidental, but three or four of them all rate in the top 20 for sand saves as well. So if that is the thing we need at Ringven, then there you go. So he was 80-1, Santiago Tarrafa, 1 point each way. They're the outrights, and plenty of value in there. We're also going to throw in a special this week. Just a quick synopsis on someone, a bit out there for a top 10. And let's reverse the order. Let's come to you, Ben. Who have we got featuring in your top 10 this week at Sudal Open?
I'm going with Daniel Brown, who has not missed a cut so far in his rookie season on the DP World Tour. I can't stress how phenomenal achievement that is. You know, from November to what are we in May, to not miss a cut in your first season, having come through qualifying school as well. An absolutely brilliant effort so far. Hopefully I've not put the bock on him this week and he'll go and have a weekend off. But look, he's neat and tidy off the tee. He's a good iron player. His short game is usually a strength. Short game let him down in Italy and he still played well. So if that short game comes back, of course, I think he's more suitable. There's no reason he can't take that small step required to get inside the top 10. Certainly been one of the unsung stars of the season so far.
Great. He's 7-1 for a top 10. So that is a great price for someone who has not missed a cut at all. And for yourself, Dave, who are we looking at the top 10 specials market?
Yeah, Ben's already made the case for him in the outrights. Eddie Pepperell. I think I've just got a slight feeling he's not quite ready to win. So therefore, I wouldn't want to, you know, the win section of my bet just going down. So I think he'll be back in top 10. You know, all the stake can be going onto that. As Ben has pointed out, he's got great credentials this week. Ninth in Italy last week. He was eighth for strokes gained approach. And as Ben said, when he hits his straps, Eddie Pepperell, as we saw last summer, he tends to string good event after good event. So there is a slight feeling sometimes when you've had a layoff that you come back and you play well and then you dip and then you go again. So there's that to take into account. But I don't know, Eddie Pepperell is just a class act, isn't he? This course should suit him. So yeah, I thought top 10 for him would for me is about the right bet to play at this stage of his comeback.
There you go. He's 4-1 for that Eddie Pepperell, and it should be a great event in Belgium with the Ryder Cup just around the corner. I think it's on everyone's mind, and there's always someone watching, a captain, a vice captain. So there's some European names at the top of the market who really want to impress.
But Jamie, question for you. Are there any of those who are really in the conversation for the Ryder Cup later this year, especially with a great performance at the Sudal Open?
It was nice to see Eddie Pepperell play well again last week. Of course, that she's suited him. You haven't got to hit many drivers here. However, he's been here a couple of times with no joy. Adrian Ategi, this is his sort of golf course. But again, I don't like the form that he's in lately, Adrian Ategi. And Jorge Campillo, for me, another one who's very accurate off the tees, maybe not the longest, doesn't need to be. But he's a supreme putter. The player that sort of sits out to me a little bit, which has just gone under the radar, is Aaron Cockerell, runner-up in Japan earlier this year. He's a very accurate player, hits a lot of greens in regulation. He's the sort of player just sneaks under the radar for me, who should do well here this week. But they're the sort of players we're all looking at. We're looking at these guys that can hit the fairways and knock it on the greens and control their irons. That's what we're looking for. Who's that going to be? Well, we'll find out, won't we?
We provided lots of names there for you, and they can obviously help build out your DP World Tour fantasy team, which is running all season. And you can fill that out with some of the names mentioned and let us know how you get on socials as well. But that covers off the Sudal Open. Time to move on to the PGA Tour at TPC Craig Ranch. Yes, that's right. It's the AT&T Byron Nelson this week on the PGA Tour. And as mentioned by Dave earlier, there's one big talking point. It's KH Lee. Can he be the first man since Steve Stricker in 2011 to do a three-peat? Obviously looking for another win at TPC Craig Ranch. He obviously moved here in 2021. It's a par 71. We'll get onto that. There's been a change to one of the holes, coming in at just over 7,400 yards. A South Korean player has won this event in the last three editions with Sung Kangwing in 2019. So it'll be interesting to see if Ben or Dave go down that route. And we see the return of home favourite Scotty Scheffler, who I think it's fair to say will be leading the market, and he is at 4-1. And it's great to see one former winner also back, Aaron Wise, who took a little break after mental health issues that he mentioned, but great to see him back. And he won this in 2018. And this is the last event before we get on to the PGA Championship Major from Oak Hill. So yeah, as mentioned, Scotty Scheffler leads the betting at 9-2, actually, you can still get him at. But Ben, why is it that KH Lee has made this course so much his? I mean, we saw it last week, Max Homer and Rory McIlroy loving Quail Hollow, and we've got a similar sort of trend. What is it that he does well that you've been looking at this week?
It's hard to say, really, except that he makes a lot of birdies, which is clearly the number one thing you need to do in a wide open on a wide open golf course, which yields loads of them. I mean, it was really windy in the final round in the first edition, and they still got to an absurd number under par. So, but I would say about KH Lee, he's a rock solid all rounder. He does everything well, and I think quite often we mischaracterize low scoring tournaments as putting competitions. They're not really. I mean, you're going to have to putt well, but it's not as straightforward as that. And generally, you just need to do everything quite well. And that would be him. Like, he's a strong driver. He's above average in length and above average in accuracy. He occasionally has these weeks where his approach play is fantastic. His short game around the greens is really, really good. Again, when on. And he putts well. So he's just a bit of an all-rounder. And for whatever reason, he's taken to it. And what I would say is, it's easy to underestimate this event because of its timing before a major and because of the low scoring and whatnot. But he beat Sam Burns the first time and he beat Jordan Spieth the second time. So he's beaten some world-class players to this title. The hat-trick is by no means beyond him. You know, this is probably a weaker field, certainly a weaker field than last year. So yeah, after a good week at Quail Hollow, there's probably no reason why not. What you'd have to say is, last week at Quail Hollow, I think Dave tipped him at 125-1. You could probably get twice that on the exchanges. And this week, he's sort of right up there with the best players, so I kind of feels like the bird's flown for me. But good luck to him. It's a rare thing, as you mentioned, to secure a hat-trick on the PGA Tour.
It really is. Yeah, long time since Steve Stricker did it, over 10 years now, which is crazy thing, at the John Deere, where he made sort of his home ground. Dave, you're a KH Lee fan from last week, and he found some great form with the top 10, as mentioned, getting some each way money. What about the course itself? We obviously know what he does well, but what else do others need to do well to feature here?
Yeah, so the course, Craig Ranch, we sometimes see, oh, we've only got 2 years of form to go on, but it did stage a couple of Korn Ferry Tour events quite a few years ago, 2008 and 2012, I think. And I think the takeaway from that was greens in regulation was important. So that was a bit of a clue. And then I think it did play out quite well last time, where a lot of the top finishers were really good in strokes going approach again. You know, we talked about that at the Sudal. So that seemed to be a clue. I mean, if you look at, sometimes you see KH Lee winning and you think, how on earth do you pick a winner from that? Is it just like someone who gets hot with the putter on a course like this that throws up like 25 under? But last year, if you look, three of the top five were major winners, Spieth, Matsuyama and Thomas. Two of those are Masters winners, and then Schwartz, or another Masters winner, was eighth. So whether that bodes well for Matsuyama again or Adam Scott this week, I don't know. I mean, Ben pointed out the prices. if you're not aware of KH Lee's record here, you'd look at the prices and think you'd gone mad, because Matsuyama is a bigger price with some bookies than KH Lee, and Matsuyama's in good form. So it's sort of wow. He's certainly paying a big tariff, isn't he, for that course form, KH Lee. So yeah, I feel like I got him right last week. I think there's part of me that thinks I should play some of those winnings back on him here, but unless we've got a Stephen Gallagher in Dubai scenario where he's going to come first and second in this event for forever, then I think he might just be a little further down this week. So just those odds, isn't it, where you think he can't be a shorter price than Matsuyama, can he? So, yeah, but in terms of what you need, yeah, strokes gain approach is something I've certainly focused on.
As you say, yeah, he's around. You can still get 25-1 for him. Matsuyama was at a 62 here last year to come close. He's at 22s. Other big names, we've got Tom Kim, who's been sort of, everyone's been loving on Twitter and socials as well, a bit of a character. And Tyrrell Hatton, Englishman. The odds have all come down with Spieth's withdrawal, but Jason Day at 16s and Tyrrell Hatton at 14s, sort of front the top of the market here. But let's have a look who you've gone for. We've got two outright picks and a specials bet, top 10 from each of you. So Ben, let's come to you first. Who are we betting and what stakes are we going for in units?
Yeah, I'm afraid, however desperate I am to get a PGA Tour winner, this just didn't feel the week to be getting stuck into any of the favourites. If I had to have one, it would be Tom Kim. He's based in Dallas now. He played well here last year. He just needs the putter to warm up and he'd have every chance. So I certainly wouldn't put anyone off him. But I am going down the further down the market. Another player who resides in Dallas now, and that's Brandon Wu. Comes in here off a third place in Mexico, where he also played really well last year. He was second to Justin Rose earlier in the season as well. So he's not been the most consistent as he goes into what is his second full season on the PGA Tour. But when he's on, he's able to capitalize on that. He was the best putter in the field in Mexico last time out. Typically, I'd shy away from that because I wouldn't expect him to putt so well again. But we do need someone who can light up the greens, and that would be him. He's capable of very, very good approach play. His weakest club is probably the driver, and I say that tentatively because he drives it well. He's just not very powerful. And I think if you were to sort of overlook any particular category this week, it would actually be driving, which is quite rare. I think you can get away with just about anything here. It's very, very wide and you don't need to hit it miles. So yeah, there's loads to like about Brandon Wu. He's got stacks of potential. And he said last year he'd been really looking forward to playing what he calls his hometown event now, despite being from California, a bit like Scheffler. He's made Dallas his home. So he's got loads of talent. He arrives in form. He had last week off, and I quite like that as well, because it was a very different challenge at Quail Hollow, and it's not always easy to switch gears. So yeah, he's got some questions to answer around the course, but he did shoot 66 here twice last year. If you can find four of those, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, as you say, a slow start with 73, but Friday and Saturday last year, really putting up the leaderboard. And it's just not enough when 25, 26 under is winning it. You can't really have a day off. But some bookies haven't 55-1, but there's still 80s available for Brandon Wu, which is a general price for someone, as you say, very generous. Third last time out in Mexico. And Dave, what about yourself? Who have we got headlining for you this week?
Yeah, so mentioned strokes gained approach. Five of the top six last year were in the top seven for strokes gained approach. So that was my first port of call to run down that list. And I did stop at Davis Riley. I think he was quite popular last week, wasn't he? And he let a lot of people down. But sometimes with that, if you haven't picked him, you think, right, I'll sneak him in next week when everyone's giving up on him. So I've got no sort of let down from him last week. I go in with a clean slate. So I'm just thinking Davis Riley in Texas, in any southern state, is a good place to back him, particularly in Texas. You've got him finishing ninth here last year, shot a pair of 64s in the middle two rounds, so that was great. And then he finished fourth at Colonial a couple of weeks later. If you go back to his Corn Ferry days, he won the Corn Ferry at San Antonio Championship in 2020. So lots of good form in Texas, lots of good form in the southern states. He won the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago with Nick Hardy. So it's just one of those ones where you're just trying to time him right. And yeah, very popular last week. And anyone who was on him last week, I think you were, Ben, where you might say, well, he did this wrong. And he can have bad, he can bomb quite badly, can't he, Davis Riley, and just have terrible weeks. But generally, if you stick to that overall impression that the best time to back him is in this part of the world, He's 25th for strokes gained approach this season. If you just look at his price, I think you can get 55-1 in an event where lots of the big guns aren't playing. You know, we've seen him go off at 28s in similar sort of contests like this. So just for one bad week, I thought 55 was a really good price on Davis Riley. So he seems to tick all the boxes for me.
I tipped him last week, Dave, as you say. And going back to the KH Lee thing, he was a shorter price than KH Lee last week. And now he's twice the price. So I totally understand. And I did consider him myself. He had what I would describe as possibly the worst ever round of putting last Thursday. I think he lost 7 strokes on the greens. I mean, he would have been better if I'd done it for him. If there's anything you can just cast aside, I think it is that. It's not like he was hitting off the planet. He just couldn't make a putt from outside about 2 feet. So, yeah, I will be in a painful place on Sunday if he does win, but I'll be happy for you, Dave.
Okay, and we will mark down foursomes, Ben Coley, Davis Riley at some point, just to finish off.
Greensomes, I can only do the putting for him. I don't want to be hitting any approach shots for him, but the putter I can take over, yeah.
Okay, and if he does hold them, he'll get in positions because he's, just under 70% for greens in reg, which gets him pretty high up in the numbers on the PGA Tour, sort of top 35 or so with that. So 55-1, and that was, so just about what stake are you doing there? How many units there for us, Dave?
Yeah, so we've got two picks, haven't we, each week? So I'll go 2 points each way on Davis Riley.
Beautiful, 55-1. Graham, we've got one more outright from you, Ben Coley. Who's bringing it home for us there?
Hopefully Eric Cole. Sort of good and bad memories of backing Eric Cole this season. He's runner-up at 175-1 when I tipped him for the Honda Classic. And, if that falls your way, it's the whole season on the PGA Tour taken care of. He was dead unlucky. He should have got up and down on the last hole to win the tournament, and he didn't. And I can perfectly understand why. But anyway, for the most part in that final round, he played brilliantly. He looked like someone who's just going to be better when they're in the mix. And that's quite a rare talent. And I think we saw it again in Mexico. Now, okay, he probably never thought he was going to win that tournament because Finau and Rahm were in the top two positions. But he got in the top 10 after round one and he stayed there all week. And I really like that quality in a player at a big price. I think this course would be good for him because if he's got a weakness, it's the driver. You look at statistically, he's gaining strokes everywhere else apart from off the tee. But his driver can be really good. It was at the Honda Classic. The problem he's got, he hits every shot with about a 20-yard draw. And although I'm no expert in terms of the playing side of this game, I think that can cause problems when it's not on. He doesn't have a sort of fallback position. But this golf course, really, really wide fairway. So he can just get up and sling it down the right side of the fairway and he'll be in business. And I'll make it sound very, very easy, but hopefully it proves to be. Since Mexico, he's only played once at Quail Hollow. I would have thought that sort of one-dimensional shot shape would be a problem for him there. But to be honest, the only real flaw was his putter. It's usually a strength. It's been his best club. He's one of the sort of top 10% putters on the PGA Tour this year. So, I think he's got a chance here. And the key really is the grade. We've got a handful of very, very good players and major champions. But it's kind of akin to the Honda Classic, only with Scotty Scheffler at the top of the betting, who I think is probably vulnerable. So, Eric Cole, he's played well in these weaker tournaments all year. And if he gets that putter working again, I think he'll go really well.
As you say, I think you mentioned people call it a putting contest because of the low scores. It isn't always, but if it is, he's around there because he's third overall for putting stats on the whole tour. And if he's in contention, he usually would go well, 8th in round 4 scoring. So come Sunday evening, if he's up and around the leaders, we know he's not scared to put in a low one. He's 100-1. And was that 1 point each way for you there, Ben?
Yeah, for both him and Brandon Wu, 1 point each way.
The hometown thing does help, and that's probably why we see such short odds for Scotty Scheffler there. But Dave, who's your second tip bringing us back to the AT&T Barry Nelson?
I'm going to go for Joseph Bramlett. I think he's about 70-1. He's a guy who smashes it off the tee. He's been in the top 5 for driving distance in the last 2 tournaments. One of those, he was 10th in Mexico, which I thought was a good run. And then he's got course form here as well. He was 7th 2 years ago. Also played well in Texas in the Houston Open back in October, November, 9th place there. And his approach play is good as well. In terms of greens and regulation, 8th and 12th the last 2 weeks for Joseph Bramlett. Now, the worry here, but we've kind of answered this a little bit, in these aren't putting contests. It's about setting up lots of chances. I think he'll do that. Just kind of hoping rather than expecting him to hole. If you go down his weekly strokes gained putting stats, they're all a bit not great. But you know, at that sort of price, 70-1, we don't necessarily expect him to win. But it's certainly his long game, his tee to green game, is enough to get him in contention and certainly get an each way return from him. So yeah, Joseph Bramlett, good form in Texas, whacks it a mile. And I think he's good enough to get a PGA Tour win soon. So why not this week?
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, he's 15th, I've noticed there in tee to green. And as you say, very long off the tee. One theme with a lot of your picks is how good they are, so the long approaches, sort of 200-yard mark. And it's not a short course at, over 7,400 yards and past 71 with the change to the 12th hole. It is. So that's a stat that everyone sort of featured in the top 30 for long approaches. So impressive scoring that it is so low there. So Joseph Bramlett, 70-1. And that was, I think, 1 point each way there from Dave. Jamie, a question for you. Are there any names at all on that tour, the PGA Tour, who have been going great this year and you think could feature later on this weekend?
Well, there's a few. I mean, you've got to look at Scottie Scheffler, number two in the world, 10th in the Masters, not played since the Heritage, where he's 11th. You just can't count him out, can you, this native Texan? He just keeps surprising Scheffler every week. Let's go outside of him. I really like the pick of Davis Riley. I saw him at the Zurich the other week when he won with Nick Hardy. He was the mainstay of that pair when he won there. He will be winning on his own very soon because he is a very impressive player. He's got all the game. He's long, his iron plays strong, and he putts really well. So Davis Riley, everybody, keep on the right side of him. The other one is Tom Kim. Two-time winner. He finished 17th here last year. He's won twice since then, so he's a better player than he was this time last year. He's a young and up-and-coming possible superstar as well. Plays with a big smile on his face. So. And I know both the guys have tipped them, but I'm not surprised either.
Oh, that's great to hear. We've got everyone in agreement. Jamie spent experts agreeing on Tom Kim, who was mentioned by Ben. And, of course, headline pick for Dave was Davis Riley, who Ben had last week, and he did disappoint him, but this course should really suit at big odds as well at 55-1.
Great to hear from Jamie Spence there, and you will hear his dulcet tones all week from the Soudal Open. That's pretty much everything from us this week. Thanks to Ben Coley. You can thank him on Twitter at Ben Coley Golf for the Moronk 20-1 winner last week, and hopefully he goes again well this week. And also Dave Tyndall Golf. Yes, there's a theme. That's his handle on Twitter. And it's been great having him. And we will hear from both of them again later in the season. But now, just let's quickly recap on all of their tips. Let's look at Ben Coley's tips at the Soudal Open first. He opened with 3 points each way for Adrian Ategi at 20-1, followed by 1.5 points each way with Eddie Pepperell, who's at 40-1. And best price, Santiago Tarrio, 80-1, was worth 1 point each way for Ben Coley. He also threw in the specials market a top 10 for Daniel Brown. Hasn't missed a cut this year for the rookie, and he is 7-1. Dave Tyndall in Soudal has gone a slightly different route. He's gone 2 points each way for Alexander Bjork, heading the market at 18-1. And then Maximilian Kiefer at 40-1 for 1 point each way. His special bet, top 10, also Eddie Pepperell, 4-1. And that is 2 points from Dave. And heading over the pond for the AT&T Byron Nelson, Ben Coley opened up with 1 point each way for Brandon Wu at 80-1. And also someone he's had form with before this year, Eric Cole, 100-1 for him, also 1 point each way. Dave's two picks, it's Davis Riley again, 55-1 this week and 2 points each way from Dave there. And then just a point each way for Joseph Bramlett, 70-1, and another very strong iron player featuring at the AT&T Byron Nelson. Well, there you have it. A pretty comprehensive preview of both events from either side of the pond. Good luck with all of your bets that you place. Remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. But join us next week here on The Tips as we preview our first major. It's the PGA Championship from Oak Hill. Enjoy all the golf and we'll see you then.